Hey there, Ear Hustle producer Rasan New York Thomas.
What's up, executive producer Bruce Wallace? I like giving Earlonne and Nigel a break from the mic sometimes so the rest of us can take over.
I know. I hope we don't burn the building down.
Hopefully not.
But we are here to say thank you to listeners who have already donated to our fundraiser.
Yes, thank you. And since we're making folks listen to us, let's make this fun. Bruce, what's something that you wish listeners knew about making Ear Hustle?
Yeah, you know, one thing I think about a lot is that we get a huge volume of notes, messages coming in email and social media, snail mail. And unlike other shows where I've worked, we actually read and respond to almost everything we get. Not like the real mean stuff, but all, you know, most everything else. We give sort of like time and thought to, which I think is pretty special.
It is.
How about you? What's one thing you want our listeners to know about Ear Hustle?
I think how hard everyone works.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Like Nigel's really creative and she's always in the trenches trying to edit audio. Earlonne takes responsibility for sound design.
Yeah, all the sound design is him.
He's up late every Tuesday night trying to get this thing done with Wednesday morning. It's an amazing show. We're a small team though, and we're like ants. We lived in 10 times our own way.
Oh, I like that. Like ants, okay. One thing the listeners probably already did know is that we rely on their support to keep making the show.
This year, we're trying to reach 1,000 supporters. Everyone who donates will be invited to our virtual party on June 13th.
And everyone who donates $10 a month or more will get access to Ear Hustle Plus, which is our new subscription service that has ad-free episodes and tons of cool bonus content that you, Rasan New York Thomas, are producing.
Yes, and every single gift will help us reach our goal and help us to keep making this show. Learn more and donate at earhustlesq.com.
And listeners, thank you so much.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds.
You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Rasan New York Thomas. I'm a writer, an advocate, a director, a producer, a podcaster. And this episode of Ear Hustle contains language that may not be suitable for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
This is our last episode of the season, and Earlonne, it's a big one.
Indeed. We're going to end the season with stories about the COVID outbreak in California prisons.
Earlonne, this has really defined the year.
Right.
San Quentin has been on some version of lockdown or modified program since March, so we've produced this last season from the outside.
Yeah, we can still occasionally talk to guys inside on the phone, but we're not able to be in there to see the people we really care about.
And honestly, we're worried about them. I think in the like 10 or 11 years that I've been working with the people inside San Quentin, this is the first time the wall between me and them just feels impenetrable.
I feel you.
Yeah, man, it's unnerving.
It's like there's this wildfire going on inside and we're just watching it from a distance.
Yeah. Since March, there have been over 34,000 confirmed cases of COVID in California prisons. 111 incarcerated individuals have died. And even now, as we record this on December 21st, things are getting worse. The surge that's happening outside is happening inside, too. Across California prisons, there have been over 9,000 new cases in the last 2 weeks.
And it's gotten close to home. Back during San Quentin's outbreak, my brother got sick, and our colleague New York did too. And when we talk to the guys in there now, they're hearing about lockdowns, quarantines, modified programs. They don't know what's going on. So, I mean, shit, they scared. Today on the show, we're going to tell stories about how the pandemic has affected incarcerated people and their loved ones.
And stories about what it's like to get out of prison in the middle of a pandemic.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor, and this is Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
What's happening, dog?
Oh, you know, doing the stizzle.
This is Juan Carlos Mesa. Listeners might remember him from our CO's episode. He was the guy with the Captain Crunch hat.
Carlos is out now, but he was still at San Quentin when COVID broke out in the spring.
Yep, right at the end of May. That's when prison officials fucked up and bust a bunch of incarcerated men from the prison in Chino to San Quentin.
Some of those guys had COVID, and soon people at San Quentin were getting sick.
Carlos says pretty much the first thing that happened inside was the COs keyed the door, which means they went door to door locking people in.
So nobody was leaving their cells.
I still got up in the morning. I wake up at 4 a.m, period. And I would go about just trying to figure out ways to occupy my time, writing letters, find things to cook, just little things.
And I know we said this before, but if you haven't spent time in prison, you really need to visualize just how small the space is that Carlos is spending his day in.
Yeah, at San Quentin, there's really only enough floor space for one person at a time. So if your cellie's standing up, you got to be on your bunk.
I have to lie down because I can't sit up straight on my bunk because I'll hit my head on the ceiling. So it's for me, it was really like lying around and trying to just make the day go by without worrying too much about if I'm going to get out of that cell or not.
From the beginning, people inside were feeling unprepared. They didn't think prison staff was supplying enough masks or cleaning supplies. And just like out here, nobody knew exactly what the protocol should be.
So guys were doing what they always do, improvising.
Man, there was one guy, man, he had the face mask. He had on gloves. He found a paper suit in the garbage that he put on and walked a tear in that. It was the best. Like, man, you're going overboard on this. Like, I love you for that. My favorite was the old man. So I had an old man that used to live down the way. He's about 500 years old. And he wrapped his whole head in a towel, had on like these gloves that, you know, like Mickey Mouse gloves, right? And he'd have his coat on buttoned all the way up. And he'd just shuffle everywhere. But he had on shower shoes the whole time. That's the whole thing. He got all this other protection, but he got on his shower shoes. Shuffle.
Which are flip-flops.
Yeah.
I mean, Carlos can joke about it now. Mm-hmm. But I remember we talked with guys inside, and they were really terrified.
Absolutely. I mean, in prison, all you can do is watch what's on the news, and you try to figure out what's going on. You could feel cut off from information, you know? So guys were getting scared and angry.
Did anyone's behavior change or get really erratic?
I mean, of course, people are getting upset, rattling the doors, you know, yelling, fuck you, what is this? There was a sense of panic at one time where we were sitting there and we didn't get a shower. You know, it's time to start yelling, hey, it's shower time and we're going to demand it.
And what would people be yelling?
Phone time. Hey, motherfucker, it's phone time. Type shit, or hey, where's my fucking shower?
What was their response?
Showers would be in 5 minutes. We're like, fuck, 5 minutes. I want my fucking shower now.
Did you yell too?
Of course. Of course. Because if I say, hey, may I please have a shower in a respectful voice, I will not be heard in prison.
At the beginning of June, there were 2 active cases of COVID. 2 weeks later, there were 200. By the end of June, over 1,500. Carlos says people were yelling man down all the time.
There were just so many. They were carrying people out like it was a war zone. You know, as soon as they would leave, they would call them right back and there'd be another older gentleman going out. There'd be another person going out. There'd be a person going out in a wheelchair. There would be a person waiting down there with medical staff. I mean, it was just nonstop.
I think guys inside started to feel like it was inevitable, you know?
Well, we were like, let us out then. We already got it. I don't know why you're keeping us locked up. We're already contaminated. Why can't we go outside? They say fresh air is the best thing for us. There's no stopping it. You guys brought it in here already. Let us at least die walking the yard.
And pretty soon, Carlos was sick too.
I was trying to go to sleep one night. And I had an amazing pain in my upper back and neck, and I couldn't get rid of it. It was like somebody was pushing on my nerves. And then I caught a fever. It felt like my brain had swelled, and I had this pressure in my head that I could not relax. And it was like my blood pressure had went up drastically. And there, I was just like laying there like, oh, this is what it feels like to die. Okay. And I actually sat in there looking. I'm like, man, basically I'm in a giant coffin with a bunch of other people. There's no going anywhere. I have to sit here and wait for my death to come. And the truth was, like, we were never as scared or uncertain as when COVID started taking people out. Like, we'd been through mad amounts of violence where we had seen it, and we weren't scared for our own safety. This was the only time we were like, really, like, we're gonna die. And we can't escape it.
Carlos had been found suitable by the parole board. He had a date to get out, but he thought he might not make it that long.
I was sad because, you know, I never got to see my family free. I never got to walk out those doors. I was happy because I had done everything that I could to get out. I had followed the rules. I had done all what I was supposed to do to get out so my family would know that I finally got it right. So they could walk away with that, a sense of pride that I finally did get my life straight.
Carlos did make it out of San Quentin, but he's still thinking about all the guys he left behind.
Like, that's the toughest thing I deal with every day. I don't deserve to be out. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I got out. But I feel like there's a lot of guys in there that deserve to get out, that need to get out, that I love with my heart so much. And they're just, they're going through that madness, and it sucks.
Yeah.
I know this might be joking, but did you write your own eulogy?
You know I did. But let somebody else talk for me? Heck no. They might say something drastic. No, man.
Can you give us sort of the highlights? What were you going to say?
Let's see. I think the first thing I said was, I was dreaming when I wrote this. Forgive me if it goes astray.
Damn, a Prince lyric?
Exactly! You know I did.
And what about makeup?
Oh, this.
Can you describe this?
That's signature. So my eyelashes, yeah. Eyeshadow, eyeliner, you know, lean like a chola.
The good eyebrows.
Yeah, I had the line.
This is Belinda Morales, and I think one word for her is glamorous. She's like dressed to the nines, nails done, eyebrows, hair, makeup, and when she talks, she's really magnetic and expressive.
So, could you tell us the story of how you and Marcos met? Look at the smile.
I know, I love that. She's just like beaming now.
Yes, yes. He kind of had that effect on me. I was like 14 years old and he was 15. I was on my way to the corner store because we wanted to see who was gonna come and take us to go cruising down Whittier Boulevard.
This was the late 70s in East LA, not far from where I grew up.
See, the way that it happened back then is that the homeboys would come with their bombs and we would load up and we would go cruising down Whittier Boulevard. Everybody would partner up. Well, I didn't have a partner. So I said, I'm just staying. I had a bag of Fritos. And Marcos was sitting on some steps that we passed by. And he said, are you going to eat those by yourself?
Belinda's first impression was that Marcos looked kind of like a square. And that was definitely not her type.
Not her type at all, because Belinda liked cholos.
So cholos back in the day were what you would call gang-affiliated, gangbangers. He was not a cholo. He wasn't one that stood out, that wore khakis and Pendletons and headbands. That wasn't him.
On this particular night, everyone was headed out to Whittier Boulevard, but Belinda hadn't found anyone she wanted to go cruising with.
So she headed over to the party house in their neighborhood. Soon, Marcos showed up, and they found themselves alone in the living room.
Do you happen to remember what you were wearing?
Probably a tube top with some tube strapped sandals, a great pair of socks, some khakis with a black belt, and probably a blue and black striped Pendleton. Back then, the liquor of choice was either Red Ripple or Boone's Farm. So I was drinking some Boone's Farm, and he was handing me the 45s to put on the record player. And there was the song The Bells. I like to dance. I love music. I like to dance. And so I told him, come on, let's dance. And he got up and danced with me to The Bells. And then we kissed after that. From that moment, we were really inseparable.
The two of them had these nicknames for each other, Puppet and Santita.
Like, he was her puppet. She could get him to do anything she wanted.
And Santita, Little Saint, was kind of a joke, because Belinda was always up to something, but she never got caught.
Belinda said her family was pretty heavily involved in the gang life, but Marcos was different from all of that.
Yep, he was only 15, but he seemed grown up. He lived by himself, and actually he was in a gang too, but somehow he seemed to exist outside of it.
He didn't tolerate certain things, and he didn't need a neighborhood in back of him to show that he was who he was. My life back then was not a good life. So here comes this boy who was manlike, and he was like, everything's gonna be okay. You just stick with me.
So Belinda and Marcos have this heady whirlwind teenage romance. I mean, they are totally in love.
But things at home and with the gangs were getting too intense, and it was clear they were going to get into some real trouble unless they left L.A.
So Belinda went to live with her mom in Arizona, and Marcos was going to go live with family he had in Texas. The plan was that Belinda would join him there later.
But 3 days after he got to Texas, their plan fell apart.
I guess his cousins had some problems with other people, and he got into a fight on the school bus, and he stabbed one of the boys, and the boy died. And he was only 15 years old. Then they tried him as an adult. That was basically the last time I saw him, because I knew he wasn't getting out.
Marco spent 13 years in prison. He and Belinda lost touch.
When Marcos got out, he got romantically involved with a woman who was a drug addict. And soon, he started using too. One night, a fight started at his house, and Marcos shot someone.
He was incarcerated again, this time to life without the possibility of parole.
Belinda spent some time in prison too, then eventually settled down, got married, and had kids.
But in the back of her mind, there was always Marcos.
I never forgot about him. My relationships, I used to always compare them to him. Everybody knew Puppet because of the stories that I had of things that we did when we were younger. My kids used to say, oh, there's Puppet. And I used to tell him, he would have been your dad. That would have been your dad. He was never very far from my thoughts.
Belinda's brother was also incarcerated. And Earlon, I didn't really know this until I started spending time in prison, but a lot of family members basically become experts in the law.
Yeah, you need that. I mean, while you're in custody, you can't go and do the research yourself all the time. So your family members come through for you when they go and do the research for you and send you the copies of the cases that you need.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's what Belinda was doing, trying to find information to help with his case.
I was looking through this case, Ryan versus Martinez. And even when I'm reading the Bible, I always go from one scripture to another, to another, to another, just so to get grasp the concept of it. So I was doing that. I was in Ryan versus Martinez. And then I seen this case and it said Trevino. And I just was like, instantly I was like, nah, no, that can't be him. That's in California. So I researched it and I went to the inmate locator and his name was in there. Don't judge me. I was married at that time to a really good man. And I cannot say anything bad about this man because he helped raise my children. It's just that it was Marcos. That's all.
Belinda says it was her husband who encouraged her to reach out to Marcos.
I said, I wonder if that's really, really him. He says, well, you never know unless you reach out. And I looked at him. I remember looking at him. I said, you don't really want me to do that. And I remember him saying, I told you I'd make you happy. Mm-hmm. And I wrote him. And I said, I don't know if you're this guy. I said, but my name is Belinda. They used to call me Santita. It, like, it was the first time in forever.
And Marcos wrote her back.
I saw the writing. I immediately knew it was him. I left that letter on my desk, I'd say for 2 or 3 days. And my husband at that time, he said, well, are you gonna open it? And I knew if I opened it, it was gonna change everything, and it did.
You know what I love, Nige?
What's that?
A cliffhanger.
Oh yeah. And this is a good one.
We'll come back to Belinda in a bit and find out what happened with her and Marcos.
First, we're going to take a quick break. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
You sounding crystal clear today.
Thanks, E. You know, sometimes those allergies sneak up on me.
But not today. Did you change up your routine?
That I did. I now use Astapro every time my nasal allergies flare up.
That's great.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro, the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray.
Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today.
Astepro allergy.com.
Astapro and go.
Astapro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. Hear a feed from episodes across NPR podcasts that center Black voices. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
My name's Cole Beanick, and I got out on July 27th this year. I ended up getting out a little early because of the COVID releases, and I think I got fast-tracked through there.
When COVID hit the California prison system, prison officials realized that they really needed to give people inside more space to socially distance.
Yeah, they should have realized that a bit faster though, Nige.
Yeah.
Because prisons have been overcrowded for years.
Yes. So over the last 10 months, the state has released more than 11,000 incarcerated people, men and women who are within a few months of completing their sentences, and a few who had medical issues got out a little early.
Cole is one of those guys. He spent his last 5 years at California Medical Facility, a prison east of here over in Vacaville. When COVID hit, they let him out 2 months early.
Yeah, Orland. I mean, of course, that was great. But then almost as soon as he got out, he was exposed to COVID in the transitional house where he was staying. Mm. So they sent him to a travel lodge in San Francisco to quarantine.
The first night, I mean, I was excited. I was like, all right, cool. Motel. I'll go wait out my quarantine in a motel. And, you know, praying that I didn't actually, even though I was exposed, I didn't get the COVID. And so I walked in there. It was great. I had my own room. I had a TV. I had a bathroom with a bathtub. But that first night freaked me the hell out. It was the first time I'd been alone in 32 years. I'd done whole time. I'd been single celled. I did all of that. But you're never really alone. You might be, you know, alone in my cell. But there's people on both sides of me, and there's people walking by all the time. Nobody was coming by to check. It freaked me out. I didn't really sleep that night. Everything sounded weird. The noises freaked me out. I felt like a little kid. Felt like I was a little 10-year-old alone in my room in the dark. I was kind of mad at myself, because here I was, I'm free, I'm out. I have what, you know, everybody that I was surrounded with was just wishing for so long. And, you know, I'm in a motel that I don't have to pay for. And I'm freaked out. I can't even enjoy it. And here I am the first night I'm on my own, and I can't sleep.
After a couple days, Cole took a COVID test and it came back negative. So he asked the nurse.
I said, can I leave? I told her I just got out of prison after 32 years and I'd like to go for a walk. She said, yeah, go ahead.
He looked at a map of San Francisco and picked a park about a mile from the hotel.
Put my headphones on, put my music on, and I jogged there. And there was people all over the grass doing yoga. There were dogs running wild. Went and sat on a bench up at the top by this big giant statue. I took a bunch of pictures, talked to my mom. I stayed there for like 2 hours, just sitting on the bench. That was like starting to sink in. Hey, I'm actually out here.
So pretty much every morning, Cole would get up, ask the nurse if it was okay to leave the hotel. And he kept asking her, partly because of the quarantine, but also because he was just so used to having to ask for permission to do anything.
So every morning, the nurse said he could go, and Cole would head out into the city.
But remember, Cole got out of prison months earlier than he expected, right in the middle of this crazy pandemic.
Right. Getting out is always overwhelming, but getting out during the pandemic, it must have been hella stressful and hella weird.
And that kind of feeling really hit him this one day when he was out exploring another park in the city.
I saw all of these families. There's a big family park. Dads pushing little girls and bikes, and kids running everywhere, dogs everywhere. I just had this, I don't belong. I had this bizarre thought in my head that, man, if all these people knew me, if they knew me, if they knew what I did, then they would be afraid of me. Because at one point in my life, I was a dangerous person that was looking to prey on people. You know, I went into prison, a teenaged, drug-addicted, violent kid. When I was locked up, that's where I needed to be. I'm not part of the group of people that thinks, you know, that, you know, that I used to be this person. You know, I'm 51 years old. I just turned 51 a couple of weeks ago. But all of that stuff is still there. Everything that I did is still in my past. It's hard to shake. And so it was just a process of having to, like, calm myself down and tell myself, no, look, you're not dangerous.
I said, it's him. It's him. He's calling me. She says, well, answer it. I said, what do I say? She says, Mom, say hello.
Nige.
Yeah?
We're back with Belinda and Marcos, Puppet and Santita.
That's right. So where we left off, Belinda had just made contact with Marcos, the man she had fallen in love with when they were just kids.
Marcos was incarcerated, sentenced to LWOP, life without the possibility of parole.
Belinda came across his name in some court documents, and even though she was married and not sure it was a good idea, she wrote him a letter saying, is this really you, Puppet? And he'd written her back saying it was. Now it was her turn.
I was so nervous to respond that I sent him back his original letter. I didn't do it on purpose. I wrote him a full-blown letter, but because of my, you know, being nervous about it.
So you wrote your letter, and by mistake, you put it in, hit the envelope that he had sent you, and you sent him his letter back. I mean, I would have taken that as like, oh, she's not interested. She's so not interested. She's sending my letter back.
Yeah. And that's exactly what he thought. He told his bunkie, and his bunkie said, man, just write her back. You know, just get clarification, write her back. That's when he wrote me the second letter. And he told me what happened, and that's how I knew to look into the envelope. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so I told him, call me, here's my number, call me.
Belinda was out shopping with her daughter one day when the phone rang.
So I answered the phone, I said hello, and then it said something about you have to put money or something like that. So then I said, oh my gosh. So I said, if you can hear me, call back, call back. My daughter was laughing. She said, like, you're funny. You are so funny.
So all those feelings came back very quickly.
Immediately. It was like my heart was pump, pump, pump.
They've never gone away.
She was 14 again.
Exactly. Yeah, 14.
Yeah. Yet.
Your husband, the guy that you were married to, I mean, he really set it up for you to do what you needed to do, but he lost you by doing that, right?
You know, one day I was talking to Marcos on the phone, and he was in the car, and Marcos said this. He says, is he okay with you talking to me? I said, him and I have already discussed this. And that was before we, like, rekindled. You know what I mean? We were just talking, but I knew.
Well, I'm just going to tell you this. If you had the same facial expression when you were talking to him on the phone that you have now, I mean, your husband had to know you were in love with him.
Yeah.
It's so clear. Yeah.
Belinda knew she had to follow her heart and be with Marcos, which meant she had to leave her husband.
I became mean with him in hopes that he would say, I'm done with you. But that was just not his character. He raised my kids. My grandkids, that's their papa. You know, and this was truly, is truly, truly an amazing man. You know, and any woman, I was lucky to have him. He accepted all my flaws. You would think that was enough. I knew what I was doing was wrong. I knew it because he didn't deserve it. But Marcos, I was always in love with that man. There was nobody who could match up to him. Nobody.
So I just want to ask you this question about love. So you said that you loved your husband and you love Marcos. What is the difference in those two kinds of love?
When you have love for somebody, you can do all the things that you normally do. Like you cook for them, clean for them, you know, hug them and all these other things. But when you've got a soulmate, it's just, like you say, you see my face? I never had that face with my husband. My kids never saw this face before. And so I went to my daughter and I said, oh, mija, I'm so sorry. And she looked at me, she goes, Mom, it's okay to be happy.
At the time, Marcos was incarcerated at Pleasant Valley State Prison in Kalinga, about a 10-hour drive from Belinda's house.
Belinda went to see him.
I remember the first visit. I cried all the way home. It was one of those happy cries. Yeah. Like I couldn't believe that I had found him. I remember him walking in, and I felt my knees felt wobbly, and I really, really felt like butterflies in my belly. I was like, this is that guy. This is him. I mean, there was no 38 years in between us. Like, we were just little, and now we were big. That was it. But those 38 years never happened. We were Puppet and Santita again, all over again. Just now, we were grown up, and we were Marcos and Belinda. He told me he was LWAP, and I knew that. That didn't matter. I lived a whole lifetime without him. And if I had so much joy that everybody else could see it, why would I want to do anything else?
How often were you able to visit?
A lot.
How many miles did you put on your car?
I took airplanes. Okay. I rented vehicles. Everything. I got there. It didn't matter.
When you started hearing about COVID, what was going through your mind and his mind?
I was one of the disbelievers. I said, this is the government's way of just trying to control people from doing things. I said, it's just a common flu that everybody's going to get. I said, people die from the flu all the time. And then they started dying in prison. And I told him, I said, no, 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 no. People are really, really dying from this. He says, I'm okay. He says, I'm doubling up. I said, I know, but you don't have no sanitizer. You don't have nothing to keep your environment sterile. I said, and then you don't know who has it and who doesn't have it. He says, well, nobody on my yard has it.
This was in March 2020. Belinda was about to move so she'd be closer to Marcos. And then the pandemic hit the prisons, including Chino, where Marcos was.
And then all of a sudden, one of the COs had it. And then two of the COs had it. It just went like a rampant fire. One day they had COVID, and then people were dying.
Marcos was already at risk. He had chronic lung disease and lupus. Soon he got sick.
I heard his voice, and I told him, I said, what's wrong with your voice? And he says, you know how I get when I sleep in front of the fan and my nose gets stuffy? I slept in front of the fan. And I said, no, no, no. I knew it wasn't just that, but I didn't want him to know how scared I was for him.
A few days later, she got a call from him.
And he says, Mija, I'm just calling you real quick to let you know that I had a little bit of fever. So they're going to quarantine me for 14 days, and I'll call you as soon as I get out. And I remember praying and praying. And then I had like this feeling of relief inside of me, you know, and I had wrote him a letter and I told him, you know, God knows the desires of our heart. I don't think he brought us together all this time just so that we can be taken away from each other. We're going to be okay. I think like on the 30th that I wrote that letter. He's going to be fine. He's a strong man. He's not going to leave me alone. June 3rd. I got a call. And I knew. And I said, no. No. Mm-mm. This isn't real. This is not real. I was waiting to wake up. I just wanted to wake up.
Is there any way to describe how your grief feels?
It feels like half of me is gone. I try to stay busy as much as I possibly can, and as long as I don't really have to think about time without him, I'm okay.
This one here, this is my signature one.
In the living room of Belinda's house, there's this whole wall that's dedicated to Marcos, a painting he did, little gifts that he had given her, his cane, and then there's this photo of the two of them.
Yes. She got this huge smile on her face. He's standing behind her, and he has his arms around her.
Can you describe it? Because people won't be able to see it. So
I'm like in his arms, wrapped around me, and it's like I don't want to be anywhere else.
You fit so nicely there.
I did.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll never hear the bells if you leave me. I'll never hear the bells. The bells, if you leave me, I'll never hear the bells. Do you hear what I hear when your lips are kissing mine?
San Quentin prisoner Richard Stitely died June 24th from complications related to COVID-19.
Joseph Cordova died July 1st from complications related to COVID-19.
Manuel Alvarez passed away on July 3rd from COVID. Manny was a big kid. I recall when he told us when he first came to the United States, part of the Mariel boat lift. There were free Coca-Colas there, and he drank so much that he became violently ill. I remember another time he had Metamucil, and it was sweet, and he couldn't help himself. He had a sweet tooth, and he ate so much of it he became ill as well. That was kind of who Manny was.
Scott Thomas Erskine died July 3rd from complications related to COVID-19.
Julian Carey passed away on July 4th, 2020, from complications of COVID-19. He was very skilled at playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a Japanese card game, and you make your own decks. He was highly skilled, actually. He was one of the best. I barely ever beat him, but there was a lot of us who tried.
Joaquin Diaz died July 5th from complications related to COVID-19.
Okay, I'm speaking for Gerald Johnson, who passed away July the 5th, 2020, complications from COVID. Gerald was a diabetic. I was a mentor for diabetics. And one thing everybody knew about Gerald was, but everybody knew that Gerald could not utilize the needle for the insulin. You know, and as an older fella, you know, we would think that he could, but he just couldn't do it. So the nurse would always come out there, and, you know, we'd always, everybody was always having fun and clowning. She's, you know better, you should be able to do this, you know. And come on over here, and, you know, and she would inject him. Because he would literally get on his knees and stick his arm through the, you know, through the window if they didn't want to come around. But most of the time, they would just come on out. But he couldn't do it for nothing in the world. It just wasn't in him. And he would laugh while she was doing it. She was laughing. Everybody was laughing. The staff would laugh. Everybody would laugh. He just couldn't do it. But he was a good dude. You know, he was one of the good guys.
David John Reed died July 7th from complications related to COVID-19.
Francisco Ramirez died July 11th from complications related to COVID-19.
My dad, Daniel Eugene Lewis, passed away July 11th, 2020 at 12:30 p.m. due to COVID-19. We'd always get together, like on the weekends, because I have two other brothers as well and then three other sisters. We all, you know, with my dad, and we just all just, you know, barbecue, put the music on, and he could sing. He could sing better than me. I mean, he's not like a, you know, Teddy Pendergrass or anything like that, you know. Earth, Wind, and Fire, Keep Your Head to the Sky. That was like one of our songs that me and him really, really liked a lot, you know. Yeah.
I just want to talk on behalf of Daryl Gott. He died on July 12th from complications to COVID-19. And Daryl was a really close person to me, and I've known him for years. He was my confidant, and we used to talk a lot. And, you know, he had patience with me, and he had patience with everybody that was around him. And he was very thoughtful, and he listened to everyone that, you know, that wanted to talk to him. But he was quiet and reserved, and you had to really, you know, get to know him before you really seen the person that he was. He was a loving brother, you know. It's like all of us, he come through here and he had changed his life, you know. His walk was with Jesus, and that's what Daryl was. He was a true believer of God and a nice gentleman. And he's very much missed here.
John Stevens died July 14th from complications related to COVID-19.
Jeff Hawkins passed away on July 15th, 2020, from COVID. Back when Jeff and I were teenagers and we had first started getting to know each other, we went out into the carport where my mom had her car parked, and there were some cupboards. And there was like four doors and they were open, and we were sitting there with our feet hanging out. And we took blankets out there, and we just sat there with our feet hanging out of the carport all night long, and we just talked. We talked about some of the things that he had done to get himself in trouble. We talked a lot about his parents. We talked about school and how I was trying to get him to go back to high school, and we just talked all night long. I remember that. It was just him and I. And then my mother came down and said, "What are you guys doing?" It was daylight out. I do remember that night. I remember that night like it was yesterday.
Troy Asmuth died on July 20th from complications of COVID-19. You know, I've always personally been afraid of spiders, and so I was pretty amused when Troy showed me his pet spider collection. Living on death row, he had captured three rather large spiders and put them in these big plastic soda bottles, and he was very proud of them. I remember him showing them off to me. And he fed them insects that he captured in his cell. And so I really enjoyed visiting with him, standing outside his cell, and I didn't mind his pets as long as they stayed in their bottles. He had him for about a year until one day one of the guards decided to search his cell and he threw away all his pet spiders. I saw him in late June, a few days before I received a positive COVID-19 test myself. And by that point, the virus was spreading really quickly in the prison and hadn't yet reached his housing area, but within a day or two, men there started getting sick too.
John Beams passed away July 21st from COVID-19. JB was a really warm person. When you would go to see JB, JB was concerned about how you were doing. That's primarily what he wanted to focus on first. JB was warm, joked around with everyone on his team, wanted people to feel at ease. A lot of the clients who I represent are focused, and justifiably so, on their own difficult situation. But that wasn't true of JB.
Severin Whitney died July 24th from complications related to COVID-19.
Eric William Warner died July 25th of coronavirus. We all call him E. In any situation where other friends of his or other inmates would come to him with a problem, legal or emotional, spiritual, he would help anybody that needed help. And at the end of everything, even when the problem is bleak, Eric will always say, God will bless.
Joseph C. Townsell died July 25th from complications related to COVID-19.
Johnny Avila died on July 26th of complications related to COVID-19. I knew Johnny very well. For the whole time I had worked at San Quentin, he was a regular member of our Catholic community on death row. And what I really remember most clearly about Johnny was how important family was to him. He spoke a lot about his parents. His mother was aging and was worried about her health. I accompanied him as he went through the process of his father's death. And his brother also died in the past couple of years, and he took it really hard. He had a cousin on death row there at San Quentin who he was very fond of, and he was always kind of looked out for him. But he was just a really, family-oriented person who loved his family and felt very much connected to them.
Orlando Romero passed away from complications of COVID on August 2nd. While on death row, Orlando became a very accomplished self-taught painter. He then taught others to paint. During lockdowns, they'd line up to show him their work. When COVID hit and before he was sick, he began sharing his precious art supplies with them. It's important, he said, to keep the men busy while they're scared.
Raph Ruiz died August 2nd from complications related to COVID-19.
Corey Sanders passed away August 3rd from complications of COVID-19. We went to elementary school together, and we were talking about him going home because he's supposed to go home next month. When the pandemic hit, and I come down, check on him, man, you good? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. It was about 2 weeks later. I come down, check on him, and Shelly tell me, he's like, oh, yeah, man, your boy Shannon, and he passed away. I went back to my cell, you know, like, I dropped the tears, like, my boy gone, you know? Corey was a cool dude, you know? He was, he always put somebody before him. If he got two suits and you need a suit, instead of him giving you one, he gonna give you two, you know? He was that type of person.
Alan Beisel died August 6th from complications related to COVID-19.
Pedro Arias died August 9th from complications related to COVID-19.
Sergeant Gilbert Polanco passed away August 9th, 2020 due to COVID-19 symptoms. So Sergeant Gilbert Polanco and I, along with a couple other officers at San Quentin, we formed a little fishing group together. It was supposed to be on a small scale, about 4 or 5 officers, just throwing in a few bucks, going out, having a good day. You know, we work a stressful job. And Gilbert never does anything on a small scale. Everything Gilbert touches ends up being a big deal. And now we're making T-shirts. We're soliciting businesses for help, and we try to get first responders, any local first responders and staff from San Quentin, just to get out and enjoy, you know, some outdoor time. We're going to hold our third derby next year, as soon as COVID can lift, hopefully. And we are renaming it the Bobby G. Gilbert Polanco San Quentin Third Annual Fishing Derby. You know, we really miss him, and we wish that he was still here with us.
John Brown, a.k.a. Matt Brown, died of complications from COVID-19. Everybody knew John Brown as Spanky. Well, you know, when you first meet some people, they either look you up and down or wonder or don't have too much to say to you. And Spanky would talk to you as if he'd known you all your life. He was a good person. And may Allah be pleased with him. But, you know, I just, wow.
On September 25th, 2020, Michael Hampton passed away due to COVID-19 complications. It was a time where, you know, we were in the kitchen, we were working together, and I was doing inventory, and we just got a full truck of inventory that they just dropped on us. And I was just so frustrated because we were shorthanded, and we had so much product to take care of. And he was there even helping, and he lended a hand, and he was just, it was just a frustrating time for me. And he identified it, and he pulled me to the side, and he was like, look, man, you know, take your time. It's going to be all right. We ain't going nowhere. You know, breathe. You know, he was just there for me, man.
Twenty-eight incarcerated people and one correctional sergeant have died so far at San Quentin due to complications from COVID-19.
111 people incarcerated in California state prisons have died of COVID, and that number continues to grow.
Hello.
Hey, Nod.
Hey, New York.
Hey, Nigel. The whole crew's here, huh?
Oh, man.
The whole crew.
Well, nice to hear everyone's voices.
Thank you. Right on.
Can you tell us a little bit what the mood is like right now at San Quentin?
Kind of disgruntled. People are feeling like the older guys especially should have been released so we could be socially distanced and be safe. We're kind of discouraged that there's some good people that we know that, like, were over-sentenced for three strikes law and different things and that are died dead of COVID. Me, personally, I learned to embrace my struggle. So instead of seeing this as a hardship, I feel like God got a meaning for all this. And I've been embracing it. And since I've had that philosophy, things that look really bad turn out to be really good. And even with all the martyrs we had this year, it feels different because normally we have all these people die and nothing comes of it. No change, right? So the death this time is going to lead to some real big changes, man. Generally, like, there's a lot of pressure to reduce the population. So I think that the prison system is going to be different after this.
No, it's definitely good to hear you optimistic.
Well, let me clarify, too, right? We still dying, bro. We still dying. There's some changes going to be made, but, like, the change I want to see is probably not going to happen for another, God knows how many.
Hey, New York, I want to ask you a question about optimism because I swear some of the most optimistic people I know are in prison.
Yeah, I think you have to be. Because once you give up, you buy into the fact you're never going home. Mm-hmm. But if you buy into hope, like I pretty much have, my record's not perfect, but it's good enough where I can get a second chance. And I don't know when it's going to happen. It might be 2 years from now, but it feels like a real possibility. And so it shifted my thinking. I'm actually working out now, trying to get some abs. I don't want to go home to this spot.
I have one more question I want to ask you. This is a little hard for me to ask, but it's really been on my mind. Do you feel like we abandoned you?
No, you guys included me as best you could. In fact, you let me contribute, like to be a low-budget producer running around gathering these people and getting stories that we can call in with. You allowed me to get a cameo on every episode. You kept my name alive. You actually gave me credit for producing stuff I had nothing to do with.
Oh, it's so great to talk to you.
I miss you guys, man.
Yeah, we miss you too.
Before we get to the credits, we want to acknowledge that this is the final episode of the season, and this caps off a really crazy and challenging year.
Ooh, a crazy year. Mm-hmm. 2020? Yeah, 2020. Never expected. Never seen it coming.
God, it's been a tough one. But Erlon, the cool thing about a year ending?
Yes, yes. Resolutions again. Yes. We get to re-whoop it. Yes.
Yep, and I love resolutions. So share with me just one of your resolutions for the year.
Oh, of course. So I've been thinking hard on this one too, Nigel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's technically a repeat from last year. Lose some weight.
Ah. Okay. Well, you know, I will be there to support you and join in with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And I'm going to throw one at you that I want you to join me with. Mm. I want 2021 to be the year of gratitude for all the people in our lives that we care about, and also a time to remind listeners how much gratitude we have for them for being part of this journey with us.
Hey, I love the listeners. I love reading every comment they write.
Yeah, we're all on this journey together. And speaking of the journey we've been on, Erlon,
mm-hmm.
we will be back with Ear Hustle Season 7.
Oh, man. Hey, so how many seasons is that out here? That'll be four?
Yep.
Four for me out here?
Yep. So Season 7, Season 4 for you on the outside. We'll be back early March.
New episodes in a new year.
And you know what else I hope happens in the new year? Vaccines for everyone, and especially getting vaccines inside the prisons.
True that, true that.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't like things to end, but I have to say I am ready to close the books on 2020. This year has been something else. We'll be back with you soon.
Until then, we hope all you listeners out there, as well as all our friends on the inside, stay safe and stay healthy. Thanks to Harry Simon, Brian Johnson, Steve Owens,
Santos Ruiz, Troy Dunmore, Debbie Smith,
George Williams, Jenthone Bunn, Kenneth Evans,
Rome Watson, Michael Goldstein, Roman Brown,
Mark Perez, and Dwight Kennedy for sharing memories of some of the people in San Quentin who have died from COVID-19.
Thanks to Mike Romano and Alicia Montero for their help with this episode. Thanks to KTVU and San Jose Mercury News for their reporting on COVID deaths inside San Quentin.
Thanks to the website Mourning Our Losses, which has been gathering memorials for incarcerated people around the country who have died from COVID.
Ear Hustle is produced by me, Nigel Poor, Erlon Woods, Rasan New York Thomas, John Yaya Johnson, and Bruce Wallace.
This episode was sound designed and engineered by Antoine Williams, with music by Antoine, David Jossie, and Rashid Zinneman.
Amy Standen edits the show. Shubnan Sigman is our digital producer. And Julia Shapiro is the executive producer for Radiotopia. Ear Hustle would like to thank Acting Warden Ron Broomfield. And as you know, every episode of Ear Hustle has to be approved by this guy here.
Since this is the last episode of 2020, we've made it through this very, very difficult year. All the challenges that Ear Hustle went through, and getting a season out, and just everything beyond that. It's nice to get to the end. Definitely looking forward to a better situation in 2021. So with that, I will say for the last time this season that this is Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the Public Information Officer at San Quentin State Prison, and I do approve this episode.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. Radiotopia is a collection of independent, listener-supported podcasts.
Some of the best podcasts around.
Hear more at radiotopia.fm. I'm Nigel Poor.
I'm Erlon Woods.
And I'm Rasan New York Thomas. Thanks for listening. All these beautiful seasons. See you next year, Season 7. God willing.
Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is a lot of things. Odoo is award-winning management software. Odoo is total control of your entire company in one place. Odoo is a suite of fully integrated applications for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. Basically, Odoo is what your business needs to succeed. So if you're ready to get more done in less time, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo, business management made simple.
It's Erline.
And Nigel.
Here again, reminding you to donate to our spring fundraiser today so we can keep bringing you more Ear Hustle.
Everyone who donates will be invited to our virtual party on June 13th. If you've never been, it's a fun time where we talk about the season and answer some of your questions live. Uncensored, live.
And I will be on the hologram so y'all can see me.
3DE.
On Zoom. Every donation, any amount, will help us reach our goal. So please go to earhustlesq.com to learn more and please contribute.
Thank you.
If you can find it in your heart, in your pocket, in your wallet, in the couch.
Radiotopia. From Pierre.